Welcome to 5 Steps to Digital Transformation Readiness. I'm Anne Mullaney. In this podcast, Qatar Consortium Fellow Steve Andriel outlines his proven methodology for successful corporate digital transformation. If you don't know us yet, Qatar Consortium is a global technology advisory firm. We help organizations leverage emerging technologies and the latest business management thinking to achieve competitive advantage and mission success. Through consulting, research, training, and exec ed, Qatar Consortium enables digital transformation. In addition to being a Qatar Consortium Fellow, Dr. Stephen J. Andriel is the Thomas G. Labreck Professor of Business Technology at Villanova University. His specialties are digital transformation, emerging technology trends, business technology strategy management and governance, cloud computing, social media, technology due diligence, and software IP valuation. Previously, Steve served as Director of Cybernetic Technology Office of the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is known as DARPA. He was CTO and Senior VP of Safeguard Scientifics, Inc., CTO and Senior VP for Technology Strategy at Cigna Corporation, and founder of both International Information Systems, Inc. and the Essentio Group. And he was a professor of information systems and electrical and computer engineering at Drexel University. Steve regularly writes articles and presents webcasts for Qatar Consortium and is a columnist for Forbes.com. Steve Andriel has witnessed a lot of digital transformation efforts in the past few years. He's culled the lessons learned into a methodology for digital transformation success. Steve begins this podcast by detailing the 5 steps to successful digital transformation. Then he reveals 5 myths that are swirling around digital transformation. And finally, host Rich Whalen jumps in to ask Steve a few questions that were contributed in advance by some of our members. Enjoy the pod.
So we're going to talk about digital transformation. We're going to go through this in some detail, and it has to do with what is digital transformation, and then what steps do you need to take specifically to be successful with digital transformation efforts? Because these are complicated, and like many large technology investments, they're not non-political. Obviously, there are a lot of people involved in this. So a readiness assessment really has to look at sort of content and form, style and substance, has to look at organizational structures, has to look at governance, has to look at a lot of issues like that. And we're going to go through all of those in some detail. And at the end, happy to take all your questions and talk about some of the major issues there. The best way for me to go through this is to take you to a graphic. And if you've already seen this report that I did for Qatar, then you've already seen this. If not, you can see it in the report that you can download later on. And you can see that there's 5 steps. But let me start with a definition. Because I think there's some always questions about what are you talking about when you're talking about digital transformation. What we're really talking about is impacts that emerging and sometimes disruptive technologies have on business models and processes. So a company, maybe an established company, traditional company in a particular vertical industry, would like to see to what extent a technology like IoT or location-based services or even more fundamentally, private clouds might have on their cost effectiveness, on their ability to reach customers, on their ability to develop new products, that is to say, innovate. And they want to look at these technologies sort of one by one or as a group, as a basket, to determine what impact they would have. And this will take us right to, from the definition, right to step one. This has to do with modeling and simulation. Most companies don't have a deep database or repertoire of exactly what they do to make money. They don't have all of their processes perfectly mapped, described in any kind of notational detail. So if I were to say to a company, as I've done many times in my consulting practice, you know, what are the key processes? I mean, what are the processes that you believe give you the most leverage in the marketplace? Many companies can't do that. It's always amazing to me. I'll ask them for a database. Do you have a list of your processes, and have you done a SWOT, a strength, weakness, opportunity, threat matrix on each of those processes? Have you identified the processes most vulnerable to competition. Do you know what processes your competition is implementing successfully and unsuccessfully? And again, that database tends to be missing. What I always suggest and recommendation here is to use a tool and a database to build those processes and to describe them in such a way that they can be modeled and simulated. And one of the key competencies to successful digital transformation is the ability to leverage business process modeling tools, BPM tools, and that enable creative empirical simulations. I mean, that's key. So one of the really interesting companies that does this a lot is Starbucks. So all the innovations that you see in a new Starbucks store, they started somewhere with someone modeling a process, and sometimes it results in maybe changing the configuration of a store, or often it results in things like, how do we accelerate the payment process by being cashless? And they were one of the first companies that did. They model their processes quite extensively, and they're always looking for ways to improve them. So the first thought, the first recommendation is, if you want to be successful with digital transformation, understand the processes you're trying to transform and improve. If you can't do that, then you're obviously in deep trouble before the project even begins. But once you do that, and if you formally model it, then you're in a position to simulate the impact of a technology capability, what it might have on that process. And that is the trick. The trick is modeling and simulation up front. And that clearly is number one in readiness. If you cannot do that, or there's not support to do that, then your digital transformation efforts will flat out fail. There's no possibility for success, unless you're one of those who just likes to throw technology up against the wall and see what sticks. That is, by the way, an approach that some companies use, but it tends to be slow and expensive. So that's the first step. The second step is, once you identify all of those processes that together comprise your business model, then you want to look for the highest leverage opportunities, the highest leverage processes, the ones that are most likely to yield the most impact. If I change this, then I'm likely to get the most impact, the most bang for my buck. And that's what you're looking for, because you cannot transform all the processes at the same time. You can't even transform most of the processes. So what you've got to do is you've got to prioritize. You've got to look at 1 through 10, perhaps, of the processes. Maybe you're going to cluster them. Maybe you're going to put them in a basket. That's fine. But you want to look at the key processes, whether it be supply chain, whether it be payment, whether it be customer service, whether it be branding, whether it be marketing, whether it be outreach, all kinds of different processes and process baskets. You have to know which ones, as I described with step one, you have to know which ones are out there. And then step two, how do we prioritize these? How do we prioritize them? And that's very, very important. And that, by the way, can get a little political, because some people don't want all of their processes to be made so explicit. They may not want their processes to be the target of a digital transformation effort for a variety of reasons, which we'll talk about in a moment. So it can be political, but nevertheless, it's great to present a list, a rank-ordered list of the most leverageable processes. That is, the processes most likely to yield to the positive impact of emerging or disruptive technologies. Step three, you got to prioritize, as I suggested. You have to do that with reference to a transformational goal. What are you really trying to do here? Are you trying to improve the efficiency of a supply chain? Or are you trying to reach more customers? Are you trying to upsell? Are you trying to cross-sell? What are you trying to do? You have to have a goal, because you need to align the processes that you've identified and prioritized against a goal, against a tactical or a strategic goal. So you must know where you're going to get there. And you also have to reality check your prioritized objectives. And you have to reality check them according to budget, time, talent, and market constraints. And one of the things I always suggest to companies is that it's really useful, and this may not be widely accepted or appreciated, but it's always useful to use outside people to do this. And no, this is not a commercial for my consulting services or Cutter's consulting services. There's another reason why you want to use outside people, is because they tend not to have no political or any vested financial interest in the recommendations they make to screen transformation alternatives. I have been through this 100 times in my career, where you identify a process, yellow flag goes up with the person who owns the process, and then you begin to dissect the process and decide the process is faulty, red flag goes up, politically speaking, with the individual who owns that process. Then you start talking about, we're going to make that process number one. We're going to highly prioritize that in terms of our transformational efforts. And then the red flag starts to explode because now it's like, oh, you're singling me out? So it's always better to have somebody from the outside to come up with that relatively objective assessment as to what should be the prioritized transformational target. And it also is a complicated step because it addresses resource constraints. If you're going to try to boil the ocean with that highly prioritized transformational project, you'll fail as well because there's not enough time and effort. So there's a lot of trade-offs that go on. This is why this is a complex process. But again, let's recount just a little bit. One, you have to understand the processes, have them mapped. Number two, you have to ask it, if you will, the priorities that are in the processes you want to transform. Number three, you've got to make really tough decisions about which ones go first. This is the prioritization with reference to the politics and with reference to resource constraints. Number four, this is the one that most people associate with digital transformation. So when you say digital transformation, and I do this in speeches or with clients, they'll say, okay, which technologies are we going to use? Let's make a list of the really cool technologies that'll work the best for us. And of course, as I described to them, you can't do that until you take steps one, two, three. But people want to know where the digital opportunities lie. Where they want to know there is they want to know which are these technologies that might be best suited. And those technologies tend to be organized in three baskets themselves: operational technologies, strategic technologies, and emerging or disruptive technologies. When I talk to some of the myths around digital transformation in a few minutes, you'll get a sense of why those categories make sense, because not every digital transformation effort requires a disruptive technology. It could just be the modernization of a older technology. So going from a very old ERP system to a very modern ERP system would be one example of going from an operational technology transformation from an old technology to a new technology, which would make perfect sense. The same thing is true of the other categories of technologies. But everyone wants to make a list. So is it IoT? Is it AI? Is it machine learning? Is it wearables? Is it advanced cloud? Is it the edge? Is it edge computing? I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And that is a mistake, to begin with a list of the technologies that you think might be interesting or impactful. One of the mistakes that companies make is they often will look at their competitors and say, look, they're leveraging AI, or they're leveraging machine learning, or they're leveraging IoT, whatever it may be, and say, that's what we should do. Well, makes no sense. Again, this is a five-step process. And unless you understand how to prioritize the processes you're trying to improve, then you cannot coherently select a technology to improve that process. It's that simple. The technologies are all over the place. And the reason why step four is so complicated is because the technologies that come in and out of focus change so frequently. So 3 years ago, no one was talking about blockchain, as an example. Now everyone's talking about blockchain. That would be something that if you started your digital transformation efforts 2 or 3 years ago, perhaps you built an innovation lab, or perhaps you had a team dedicated to digital transformation, either at the enterprise or business unit level, then that technology wouldn't have appeared 2 or 3 years ago. But today, it's everywhere. Same is true of machine learning. AI, of course, was there. Machine learning is a new twist. And the same is true of a lot of other technologies. Certainly advanced analytics, the way we describe it today. IoT, again, 3 to 4 years ago, people weren't thinking about it in terms of digital transformation. Of course, they were doing research in it. Of course, you could find lots of information about it, but it wasn't being deployed the way those three categories of technologies I just mentioned are today. So that's a challenge. So if you're going to do this, step four is going to require a continuous tracking of emerging and disruptive technologies, as well as a tracking of the operational technologies that could impact your ability to compete in the marketplace. So that's another important aspect of this. And, you know, if you take a look at the paper, there's just a whole list of technologies. You have your own list. Everyone's got lists. You can find them sort of everywhere. We publish them. All the consultancies publish them, like McKinsey and so forth. Everyone in the world publishes these lists. But these lists are easy to get to, but are only relevant if you've conducted steps 1, 2, and 3. So it can be fun, by the way, to do that, to track these technologies and describe them, but as to their potential. But it's not, they're out of context unless they're with reference to a prioritized set of processes. Step 5 is very, very organizational and political. And I have to share with you here the reason why I put step 5 in there, because it may seem a little different from the others, which are more technical and more and more more technical and more procedural, and they lead to certain kinds of semi, at least quantitative results. This one is softer. This one speaks to organization. This one speaks to leadership, which is always politically charged, to put it mildly. Again, I won't, because there's not enough time, but I would love to talk about some stories that I've had with going into a corporation and a very clear commitment to digital transformation, and someone saying at the highest levels, yeah, we should be doing that. And then you start to go into, say, the processes of maybe the most profitable or perhaps least profitable business unit, and you discover all kinds of broken things. And then, of course, the politics, as I described a moment ago, begin to rear its head. And then what happens is that ultimately gets kicked upstairs with, do we really want to transform this thing? And again, there's some political cross pressures. There's some resource constraints. And what you find often is that there's a shortage of courageous leaders. That is to say, there's a shortage of leaders who are really, truly interested in transforming a business model and the processes that comprise the business model of a corporation which is profitable. And I'll talk about that a little bit more, but it's very important to fully appreciate, in the context of digital transformation, the if it ain't broke, don't fix it syndrome. And many leaders will be talking a very good game about this until it comes time to maybe replace a process or tremendously transform it, or by implication, replace the owner of that process. So it's a real challenge to do that, and to expect leaders to be there before, during, and after a process. So if you find them, make sure you keep them informed, make sure that they are steadfast proponents, that they are loyal supporters of the DT, digital transformation efforts, because it's quite difficult. I will share with you sort of in the trenches experiences I've had with clients. Very often when I'm called in to do a digital transformation readiness assessment, I want to start with the leaders. I don't even want to start with the processes, even though I made such a huge deal about that in the beginning of this webinar, and I still stand by that, of course. But I want to start with the leaders. I want to start with those who are in control of the resources, who make the strategic decisions for the companies. And I do that by sitting down with them, usually in a quiet, closed room, and say, are you serious? Are you really serious? Because we will discover things here that will display some broken processes. We will display some poor leadership of those broken processes. And if we want to improve them using some of the newer technologies, we're going to have to spend some money. We're going to have to break some eggs. So I would like to know, now this is me in the consultant's mode, right? I would like to know from the beginning, are you serious? Will you be courageous at the end? And I often have that conversation with the president of the business unit or the CEO of the corporation if they're not federated into business units. And that's sometimes an awkward get just to have that meeting. And then it's an awkward conversation sometimes, which is always why I try to do it as a one-on-one, because CEOs often and presidents of business units don't like witnesses. But you really have to get a strong sense of how courageous they will be when push comes to shove. Because if you begin this effort, you will discover problems. You will discover major problems. And fixing those problems comes with a cost, a political cost, a financial cost, and a cost around time. And time means, of course, that in a zero-sum time world, it means some other things won't get done if you begin to transform certain processes. So I think that's really, really important to appreciate, which is why step number five is in there. The last thing I'll say about that before I turn to MIST is this whole idea of avoiding what I will describe as grandiose transformation. The idea is that we're going to go in and just completely overhaul this corporation because we're losing market share or because our competition is way out in front of us or whatever the excuse may be, because grandiose transformations don't work. It's impossible. The only circumstances where it will work, or at least where it will be attempted, is when a company is failing miserably. And some consultants love that because it's like they'll listen to anything I say, but that's a chaos situation. If a company is doing very well, the idea of grandiose transformation is ridiculous to them. Back to the if it ain't broke, don't fix it syndrome. If a company is doing fairly well, but it knows it needs to improve its competitive position in certain areas, then there's an opportunity to do digital transformation that's not grandiose. And grandiose, meaning whole enterprise transformation, only is an acceptable option when the company is dying, which means that your probability of success is already quite low. So it's sort of like, do we do a phased implementation of an ERP project, or do we do a big bang one switch global? And most of us who've been through that know that the latter is insane. So you want to do phased. So you want to avoid the one switch, big bang, global for digital transformation. It just won't work. And that's the summary of that first part I wanted to talk about. Now what I want to talk about is I want to talk about the myths and reality around digital transformation. And this is from an article that I published in the Sloan Management Review in January, February of this year. And it got a lot of attention because, and also got a lot of sort of negative reactions as well, which is always good. It got a lot of attention because it identified some of the realities. And I've talked through a few of those up to this point, but I want to go into more detail about them. So that there are five myths that I addressed in the piece. And they're all a little different, but let me walk through those because I think it's important to put the context into an order in which you would pursue a major project or a suite of projects in digital transformation. So the first myth is every company should digitally transform. And think about this for a moment. Not every company needs to radically change its processes. If you're in a, of course, not all processes are perfect, obviously, but radical change, no, many of them don't need to do that. There are companies that are clear market leaders that are doing quite well. You know, you could look, for example, at e-retailing and look at Amazon and say, you know, they're really sort of transforming as part of their modus operandi. I mean, they are the quintessential continuous transformation company. So maybe we don't need to step back and have a group dedicated to digital transformation and the like. But I think that's one myth that we should keep in mind, that not every process is broken. I don't want to leave you with that impression. And not every process deserves a massive investment in a new technology that can improve it marginally or disproportionately through the investment. That's sort of like a filter. In fact, think of these myths, by the way, as kind of due diligence filters through which you would pass a digital transformation project case. So if you were making the business case for one of these, keep these myths in mind. Digital transformation myth number two always leverages emerging or disruptive technology. Now, as I mentioned previously, many of the transformation projects can come from leveraging operational technology, tactical technology, throwing things into the cloud, moving to a new, as I mentioned, ERP system or CRM system, or implementing a particular capability within an ERP system or a database management system that would allow you to, you know, for example, leverage what Hadoop, Spark, and Flink will give you as a specific example. I think that is, I would not call that disruptive technology, those technologies, many of which are already in the mainstream. So I think that it's very important to do not believe that, you know what, we're going to change this whole company with machine learning. That's it. That's all we have to do. All we have to do is make massive investments in machine learning and everything will be fine. And it may well be that all you need to do is to upgrade the database or something that gives you the capability to do better CRM or to do better customer journey management, for example. So that's another myth, that digital transformation always leverages emerging or disruptive technologies. And while I'm here, let me mention that I really like the distinction between emerging and disruptive technologies, because an emerging technology doesn't necessarily mean it's going to disrupt your business, and that's a separate category. And that would be, for example, if a financial institution decides that they're going to move all of their transactions to a blockchain platform. That would be an example of a very disruptive technology, and again, the requirement for that would have to be quite dramatic. Now, as we all know, as part of the general fintech movement, financial institutions are moving to blockchain in a very phased way. They're treating it as an emerging technology that will mature over the next 1 to 3 years, and they're going to play with it, they're going to pilot it, and they're going to begin to deploy it. But the idea of doing this, as I suggested earlier, this grandiose transformation, which involves deploying blockchain globally, you know, to validate all of our transactions, would be an example of an unnecessary disruptive technology implementation. Myth three, the third myth, profitable companies are the most likely to launch successful digital transformation projects. I already touched upon this, and this is really, really, really important. And in fact, there's some data coming out about this, that the most successful companies are sometimes engaging in less transformation efforts than the unsuccessful ones. And again, unsuccessful can be measured along the continuum, which means that, you know, our expectations of going into, and this certainly speaks to organizations like ours at Qatar, is that, you know, we're going to be able to sell digital transformation to every single company in the world at an extreme level is probably very unlikely. As I suggested earlier, it's probably somewhere in the middle, not the terribly successful, the continuously transforming company like an Amazon, and probably not the failing company that needs grandiose transformation or else. It's probably all those companies in the middle. I think that's very, very important. Very important. Myth number four. We need to disrupt our industry before someone else does. You know, what's really interesting is the data that suggests where disruption comes from, true disruption. It generally doesn't come from market leaders. It generally doesn't come from the established players in traditional vertical industries. And this takes us back all the way to what, the 90s, when Clayton Christensen first published, and there have been multiple editions, but, you know, The Innovator's Dilemma, where he describes so beautifully the process by which established market-leading companies may not be looking to transform so dramatically, so quickly, simply because they're market leaders. And he uses the example of several companies that were basically scooped by smaller companies that came up with better technologies or better business models enabled by technologies than some of the market leaders. You know, it's interesting if you look at where disruption comes from. It comes historically from startups. And startups can be acquired, of course, by a larger company. But you know, industry disruptors have historically come from startups like Amazon with books initially, Airbnb, hospitality, Uber and Lyft, transportation, SelectQuote, insurance, you know, Purple, Sleep, Netflix, entertainment, GoPro, photography. I could go on. You could go on. These are smaller companies that are not constrained by either the institutional processes or the regulatory issues around change and around transformation. So does this mean there's no possibility for industry leaders to disrupt themselves? No, but it means the true disruption almost never happens in established companies with consistent, profitable revenue streams. I think that's important. So if you're in one of those companies that's doing really, really well, you're going to find it very difficult to sell a business case that we should disrupt ourselves, because if we don't, someone else will. No, conversely, what you should be doing is you should be looking at what the startups are doing and participating through, if you're large enough, your own corporate VC unit. Find out what these companies are doing, because you may be able to adopt some of their processes, some of their technologies, or hell, you may be able to just acquire them. And the last myth tracks very nicely with the fifth step that we discussed on digital transformation. That last myth is executives are hungry for digital transformation. That's a myth. In fact, the reality is that the number of executives, especially in public companies, and that's an important distinction, who really want to transform their companies is relatively small. And that, again, it all tracks, it all kind of puts together, it all kind of hangs together in terms of this, you know, where are the greatest opportunities? We have to disrupt before someone else does. It has to do with leadership and courage, as I described before. Digital transformation can be sold up the management chain, but requires overt, continuous support from senior management to succeed. And the myth is that that's relatively easy to get, and the story I described previously, you get the sense that's not so easy to get. In fact, support's more difficult to secure than we might assume. Lots of executives are suspicious of any change efforts that might affect their status in the company. This is an extremely political issue, and we don't talk nearly as much as we should about the politics of digital transformation. That in itself could be an article or even a book, you know, the politics of digital transformation, which is the flip side of that whole issue of finding courageous leaders. It's in effect, on the cynically put, good luck. Because many leaders are challenged by the sheer complexity of digital transformation projects, especially the time that transformation projects often take. And executives are also reluctant to tweak business models already generating wealth for themselves and their shareholders. Even if the market share is off a few points, even if their projections indicate that there's not a lot of competitors coming down the road, this gets very personal very quickly, especially in larger companies. And I'm always cognizant, as I'm sure you are too, of the gap between what executives say about digital transformation and what they actually do. Many executives talk a better game than they play. So I think those are some of the myths, and another way of saying it is make sure that you've got your eyes wide open when you undertake a project like this. And if you do undertake the project, which I strongly recommend you do for a million reasons, is take the five steps that I suggested a moment ago, and then make sure that those five steps are informed by the reality of some of the myths that I just discussed about digital transformation. And with that, I will open it up to questions, and I'm sure we can have a fun discussion, because I'm sure I've either made some of you very happy or a few of you perhaps very angry.
Well, thanks a lot, Steve. So take a deep breath, get a drink of water. The first question is actually was written in, and it's a multiple-part question, so we'll deal with one at a time. First part of that question is, what is the role of the edge cloud on digital transformation?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, because, you know, computing power is shifting. It's kind of like we've seen this before, right? We've seen when lots of enterprise processes went to ERP systems back in the 80s and 90s, and that was sort of the first step toward shifting control, decision-making control, and transaction control into a piece of software. Then we saw the centralization of databases, DBMS technology, in the 80s and 90s, where the attempt was to control all the data because all the processing occurred in that one centralized, or at least ideally in those days, centralized DBMS. Then we saw cloud, and we saw everything shifting to the cloud, and the assumption was that all of that computational power, whether it be a database, whether it be an ERP application, that would shift to the cloud, that would go to the cloud, so to speak. And now we're sort of seeing the declouding of the cloud with edge computing, which is really a fascinating development. And it may be where we're seeing, for example, distributed processing in many devices and many platforms, which are outside the cloud. In fact, they may talk to the cloud. In fact, they do talk to the cloud. When we look at some of the IoT implementations, that's clearly that computational power is now being distributed, being shared. I guess the response would be, of course, that still qualifies as digital transformation, but it requires us to look at emerging architectures and emerging computational architectures and the location of computational power and the relationship of those nodes, if you will, those edge nodes, to the larger cloud that we've all grown to love over the past 5 to 10 years. I mean, really love. If you look at the data about cloud adoption, it's out of control. But what's happening now with some of the newer devices and some of the newer architectures, we're seeing some of that, some of the data, for example, with IoT, some of the sensor data and other data being held in a device that may be talking to a larger computational analytical program in the cloud. So I think the answer to that question would be, yes, edge computing as an emerging architecture can certainly be a target of digital transformation, can be a solution, especially in areas like IoT. So that was my point with number four. Step number four is always tracking technology because it will change over time so quickly. I mentioned blockchain. Edge is now coming on strong as well. Edge is coming on strong now because we're implementing some of the technologies that are coming on strong, like machine learning and IoT. So if you're going to do digital transformation, you really need to track, these technologies. And any emerging architecture is going to have to be on the target list or the solution list, if you will, as to improving, as to how to improve a process. And edge would certainly be on the list.
Okay, the next part of his question and comments is, some think that digital transformation is overhyped and only for those willing to assume a fair amount of risk, whereas most IT organizations want to maintain a stable, go-slow strategy. Could you comment on that, please?
Well, everything's overhyped, isn't it? I mean, there isn't a technology or a process or, my God, you know, some of us can remember business process reengineering. Remember that one? I mean, everything is overhyped. And that's the business. It's a competitive business. It's a market-driven business. Vendors have every incentive to hype everything. In this case, it's the consultancies that have every incentive to hype these because they want companies to embark upon new initiatives to involve their service. Now, that said, it doesn't mean that it isn't valid. It means that the buyers have to have good due diligence as to what it is they expect to gain from investments in digital transformation. The other part of the question is really interesting because it dovetails with the comment about emerging versus disruptive technologies. I think that IT teams clearly want to maintain stable environments. They clearly want to make sure the trains run on time every day as advertised. They also want to make sure that the security is locked down as best as possible. So they need a certain amount of control for that. Digital transformation, from the perspective of people who are keeping the trains running on time, can be perceived as a threat. Because if you start introducing lots of change, especially overhyped change, then it could threaten the stability of an otherwise well-functioning IT infrastructure. And in that sense, they should be perhaps doubly suspicious, if you will, or cautious, or make sure that there's serious due diligence around a transformation project that could impact a very otherwise stable IT environment. I would have, I'm sure no one else on the call would have any problem with people saying that run those infrastructures, that's great, let's add a new filter here, you know, called impact on the stable environment. Because we want to make sure that this digital transformation project or the investments we might make in the technologies, the emerging technologies especially, will not destabilize the environment. All great thoughts, great question, and I think that we have to take into account exactly that, because at the end of the day, no one wants to sacrifice a stable IT infrastructure for a digital transformation project that somebody fell in love with because they read something in an airline magazine.
All right, the next question is, what would be a good or the best technical profile to participate in this challenge? Or do you need a big team of different professionals to do it?
Yeah, I published a piece in the European Business Review in January, which lists the capabilities, the required capabilities for digital transformation on the web. They track pretty nicely with the five steps. The talent required, and the one I find most often missing, is that whole process modeling piece. So I think that people really have to understand and appreciate the role that BPM, business process modeling, and business process management has in the digital transformation process. I don't hear nearly as much of that about that as we all should, because that is the window into the processes that may be transformed with technology. And that's the first skill set. The second skill set obviously has to do with, you know, more managerial tasks, like being able to prioritize projects against cost, risk, time, resources, and all the above, you know, classic TCO, ROI kinds of analyses. And then, of course, tracking the technology in an objective way. And then obviously, being able to do project management, assuming there's good senior leadership support for it. So I think a lot of digital transformation skills and competencies are pretty traditional project management skills and competencies, with the added flavor of that deep understanding of the processes, which means taking us to deep SME, subject matter expertise, in your vertical industry. So I think that's sort of the process skills. And then in addition, all this assumes a set of soft skills, which I talk about in that European Business Review piece, requires the ability to negotiate, the ability to understand priorities that may be quite different from the business side and the technology side. It's just a whole lot of communication skills and writing skills. All the things we talk about, by the way, that's also part of sort of 21st century project management. So I think the skill sets are pretty clear. I think innovation becomes a big part of it as well, and there's a whole methodology around innovation. And if the team is not used to innovating or doesn't have a background innovating, then that could be a real challenge to digital transformation.
Okay, great. The next question or comment is, I heard recently that IT is only a relatively small component of digital transformation, and that digital transformation initiatives should be led and run by the business and at a very senior level. Could you comment on this?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It depends. Well, first of all, the idea that digital transformation does not need IT is crazy. So that's number one. That said, though, let's remember step one in the process. Step one in the process is about modeling business processes. And then step two and three ends up with a rank-ordered list of the business processes that would be most impacted in a positive way with the introduction of an emerging or a new or emerging or a disruptive technology. Therefore, by definition, the business will drive the understanding of the business processes most likely to be impacted by the technologies. That said, the business side, unless it's completely decentralized with their own IT organizations, the business side doesn't really understand the trajectory of technologies, whether it's the whole suite of upgrades available to existing technologies, and certainly not emerging or disruptive technologies. So a partnership is absolutely, positively required. And again, the partnership is with enterprise IT, or in a decentralized or federated environment, business unit IT, working with those owners of business processes. It's a clear partnership. Now, some might think, well, I could go to the cloud or a third party to find the technology expertise and bypass enterprise IT or even my own business unit IT, but that would make no sense and would also be incredibly risky, because to the extent that that technology touches anything else. It could destabilize, and this goes back to the previous question and answer. It could destabilize the existing infrastructure or applications in the enterprise or in the business unit. So it is absolutely a partnership, but if the question is who kind of leads the understanding of the business processes that need to be repaired or improved or made more competitive, obviously that's the business side.
Okay, great. The next question, is digital transformation primarily about the user experience?
No. Very often, it can involve the user experience, without question, but very often it is invisible. Very often it may be a new technology that's deployed in a supply chain. It could be an automation technology, broadly defined, whether it's robotic or whether it's machine learning or whatever, an expert system simply, whatever it may be. So no, a digital transformation can occur in the infrastructure level all the way up to the user experience level, or to go even further than that, the client experience level. So it can, let's take the customer journey, for example. So digital transformation can occur everywhere in the customer journey. It can occur with the integration of structured and unstructured data around customer experiences, where the customer's previous buying, selling, upselling, cross-selling experience with the company is now captured and modeled. Well, that doesn't involve any user experience or any user interface, all the way to how do we engage with that customer based on prescriptive engagement behavior that we've learned from integrating structured, unstructured sales plus social media data, for example, as an example of structured and unstructured. And that, of course, would then speak right directly to the clients through their devices, location-based services, whatever the application may be that would be used. So no, it does not have to involve end user or user experiences. It can be all the way down in the bowels, if you will, of an Amazon supply chain distribution center, all the way up to how companies interact with their clients using coupons that are delivered to their devices on a location-based way.
Okay, great. The next question is actually three questions in one. How big can the impact on a company be, and which aspects could impact, and which one could be the biggest risk?
Well, that's pretty general. I think that the impact can be huge depending on what is going on. I mean, there's so many examples of just older systems, like an ERP system or a CRM system or an old database management system, where simply moving to a new implementation, a new version, will enable companies to see their clients more broadly and be able to engineer the aforementioned customer journey. So the impact there across the enterprise could be huge. It's huge, especially if it's a B2C company. So I think it can also be relatively small. This is the point of doing that ROI analysis. This is why you do that hierarchy, that list of prioritized processes to be impacted. So it can be huge. I think clearly you want to pick the ones that are going to have the largest impact. And remember, though, impact doesn't have to be enterprise-wide. If, for example, a company is organized as business units, which many of them are, then it may be that the target processes are in the most profitable or the least profitable, but in a specific, the point is, in a specific business unit, not necessarily all the business units. That would be non-enterprise, but rather BU focused. And there you would do the same kind of calculation, the same kind of TCO, total cost of ownership, and return on investment, ROI calculation that you would make for any project. So yeah, it can be very large and very small. It has to be impactful. It has to be meaningful because it's a project that costs time and money. So yeah, it's back to that point about pretty solid project management and business case skills to be able to find out where the impact's going to be the greatest.
Okay, great. The next question reads, I've heard that digital transformation requires us to rewire our brains in terms of how we look at IT. That is my sense in having taken a close look at microservices, cloud, DevOps, and methodologies such as design thinking. What do you think?
Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, the whole idea of, you know, agile and DevOps and design thinking as applied, as transformational of IT, and that therefore maybe digital transformation is another transformational event around IT and how IT perceives itself and delivers its services and the like. If that's how, so let's take DevOps and Agile and things like that, you know, sort of like the big improvement on the old SDLC, of course. And let's see, okay, that enables IT to do things faster, better. It enables them to do things certainly in a more responsive way, responding to requirements. It could be floating, all of that. And that's a really good thing. And microservices versus monolithic architectures certainly speak to that. That's another transformational concept with IT. That is to say, we want to move toward, I think, because it actually dovetails nicely with Agile, want to move toward microservices and away from monolithic software architectures. So enter digital transformation. Where would that be in that list of microservices, DevOps, Agile, and the others? You know what? It's fascinating because it may be it sits on top of them all, and it may be that conceptually that digital transformation is the overarching concept into which all those others fit, and that therefore, if you are fully committed as an IT organization to supporting and enabling digital transformation of business processes, that you also have to begin, have to endorse all the other pieces that have evolved with IT, like DevOps and Agile and design thinking, and more recently, microservices architectures. You may have to sort of endorse all those under the umbrella of digital transformation. How that leads me to thinking maybe it's a new way of selling some of those new paradigms of thinking. Maybe it's a way to say that, hey, digital, this enables us to enable digital transformation projects much more easily, cost effectively. So I guess I kind of like that way of thinking about all this. That is a terrific question, by the way. I think that IT needs to respond very directly to the requirements of digital transformation, which are coming primarily from the business. So for IT not to respond to this and to adopt it and endorse it and embrace it, you know, as part of who they are going forward, that could pose a risk to IT organizations. So why not get on the other side of it, just like we sold some of the other approaches to be more responsive to business requirements? Great question.
I think we have time for probably one more, so here's what I have. Organizational structures are a big challenge for large companies in dealing with digital transformation. There are no silver bullets, but how do you deal with it?
Oh, another great question. This again, I mentioned in the very beginning of this webinar this idea of governance and organizational structures. So some data is starting to come in. We collect some of it at the university, and we've collected some data with Qatar, actually, just last year on some of these organizational trends. And what we find is that there is a movement toward shifting more resources, business and technology, to business units. Now, if that trend continues and the governance in organizations continues to move from centralized to federated and maybe even decentralized, although never applicable to infrastructures, then that bodes well for digital transformation. Why? Simply because there are less decision-making layers in the process. And accountability and responsibility are more easily located in a business unit than they are enterprise-wide. And finally, I would suggest it's easier to find courageous leaders in one place who may need something fixed or want something fixed than it is to get buy-in from multiple leaders across an enterprise. So I think that's a great question. I think it suggests that there may be a greater probability of success of digital transformation in federated and decentralized organizational structures than in highly centralized ones.
We hope you enjoyed this Qatar Consortium podcast, 5 Steps to Digital Transformation. If you have any questions, you can email us at service@qatar.com. or contact us via Twitter. Our handle is @CutterTweets. If you'd like a copy of Steve's report, which is also called 5 Steps to Digital Transformation, visit www.cutter.com/5steps. That's Cutter, cutter.com/5-steps. And please subscribe to our feed for upcoming podcasts by Cutter Consortium's experts.